This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
BFM 89.9, Melissa Idris, Joyce Goh, and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories of the day. We're going to begin with an unconfirmed story published in the Singapore Straits Times that suggests that Khazanah National Managing Director Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar and eight other members of the board of Khazanah have submitted their resignations to the government.
Yeah, so apparently, according to this article from Singapore Straits Times, senior government officials had met. So Tan Sri Azman and some of the Khazanah directors had held a special board meeting late on Tuesday. They decided to sign undated resignation letters that were subsequently submitted to the Prime Minister's office. So apparently they've reached a unanimous decision that the Pakatan Harapan government should be allowed to determine the new leadership structure at Khazanah.
Yeah, so the undated letters would give Prime Minister Dr. Tun Mahathir the final say on who should remain or leave Khazanah. And we're looking at, apart from Tan Sri Azman, the other directors are Tan Sri Muhammad Nor Muhammad Yusof, you have Tan Sri Muhammad Azman Yahya, Dato Muhammad Azlan Hashim, Tan Sri Andrew Sheng, Tan Sri Raja Ashad, Dato Sri Nazir Razak, Dato Nirmala Menon, and banker Yeo Ka Ping.
Well, these are big names, isn't there? What do you guys think about this? The idea that, you know, this kind of corporate purge is now spread to Khazanah. Look, it's nothing new. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, speculation around Khazanah, especially when we heard Tun Mahathir publicly criticise what we thought was Khazanah. We're not sure who he was referring to, but it turns out perhaps that he is was not mistaken who's criticising Khazanah.
Well, I think, first of all, the language that we use, right, it's been this expression, purge, has been used. It's often used.
Do you think it's not too strong.
Right. It's very
negative. This is it, right? So a purge is a negative expression. It suggests people are being coerced, or this is done, you know, at the behest of certain individuals for their personal gain or whatever. I do think there's that, you know, framing of some of the movements that we've seen. Now, I think the concern is in some quarters that it's done in the right way. That if you want to put in people that are better suited for the job, much more loyal, not tainted by the previous administration, so on and so forth, you still have to do it in the right way.
What is the right way, Sharad?
Well, the right way would be for the board itself to decide, make a decision about whether the leadership should change, rather than people resigning, presumably on, as it's reported or suggested, because they have had a meeting with the Council of Eminent Persons, or they've read a report in the newspaper suggesting that they might be out of favour, whatever it is, that they're under pressure to resign rather than doing it in, you know, and that strikes people as an extension of a kind of arbitrariness in a governance that we had in the previous administration.
So Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar has indicated, according to this sourced story, that he was prepared to go earlier than his contract expiry if given the marching orders from Putrajaya. But apparently he never got a chance to meet Dr. Mahathir, despite making efforts to get an appointment, according to Straits Times. Now, the question is, if they're saying that the Pakatan Harapan government should be allowed to determine the new leadership structure at Khazanah, then, you know, some of the names that you mentioned, Joyce, are, you know, good people who have strong track records in corporate Malaysia, whether they would be willing to come back on if asked.
Yeah, for me, it's like a whole group of them to submit their resignations in one shot. I mean, definitely
it's a bit of a blow, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely there must have been there must be a reason for them to do this. I'm sure that Is it pressure? Is it coming from directly from the top, or is it from outside the circle? Is that what they're getting? If you're saying, like Melissa, that, you know, Tan Sri Azman wanted a meeting with the PM and he hasn't met the PM yet.
If I just could clarify, I was citing the Malaysian Insight.
Okay, yes. Malaysian Insight. Mm. If they're saying that, I mean, what kind of message is that? Is that giving to Tan Sri Azman? I want to see to see the Prime Minister. He has no time to meet up with me. What's that saying?
Okay, and well, that's first the pressure of all, that Sharad was talking about.
Well, first of all, I mean, we're talking about this is fact. fact. This is a story that has not been confirmed. Khazana has not confirmed this, in fact, the case. So I think we might be jumping the gun here a bit about whether the facts are all correct in this instance. I think we still have to wait for Khazana and Azman Mokhtar to actually tell us what the situation is. There's another aspect of it, I think, if it's true, is quite interesting, which is the idea of an undated resignation. So they haven't resigned. What they have is submitted letters of resignation, signed but undated, which then puts the prerogative, as it were, or gives, you know, the ball is now in the court of the Prime Minister, the Cabinet, to make decisions. They can date it as per, you know, what they want. If that is true, I think we must be very clear that this has not been confirmed.
Okay, whether or not it's true, but I mean, people who have left because of be it a purge or not, we have like Wahid.
That's true, Wahid Omar. That's right.
You know, all these people who if you talk to people on the ground, some of them are professionals who have done their job professionally. They have met the KPIs over and beyond. It depends on again the individuals.
Well, yeah, Wahid Omar was also a member of the cabinet under the Najib administration. So, you know, there are many reasons to. I mean, the thing is talent so sparse in this country that the departure of a Wahid Omar leaves a huge chasm
it's not
in
just
corporate
Wahid government. Omar. I mean, it's a long list. And if this story is true, it's on the Khazana board. How many names are there? It's a couple of, and they're top names, yeah?
Top names. Apparently, according to the Malaysian Insight source as well, so it's not just Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar who had failed to make an appointment with, get an appointment with Tun Mahathir. Apparently, Wahid Omar also failed to meet Dr. Mahathir. So I'm wondering whether this kind of freezing out of people getting the message that perhaps they're being frozen out out of favour from Putrajaya.
Again, you know, if you take the story at face value, it's not clear that all of them will go all at once, because if they have submitted letters of resignation but undated, and have also on the basis that they had themselves agreed that the government has the prerogative to make those decisions, then some of them could remain and some could leave.
That's a valid question, whether they would be willing to stay if asked, right? And that's a really good point too, Sharad, about the timing. You know, I mean, what kind of shockwaves could this send across corporate Malaysia if everyone left at one time?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about the first 100 days and making big changes and big reforms. I think we should be, while we're willing to give the new government the benefit of doubt and give them the time and space to, you know, act on the reforms that they've promised, you know, in the transition period. However, they shouldn't act too, let's not let the pendulum swing too far on the other side and, you know, have this kind of sweep across corporate Malaysia. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's a little nervous to be seeing this.
Yeah, look at Khazana, right? They have core holdings in giants such as Telecom, Axiata. They hold about 37%. CIMB Group, they hold about over 20%. Tenaga, you know, Malaysian Airports, IHH Healthcare. You know, they have, you know, core shareholdings in this. And if the story is true, if the whole group of directors, if they've been asked to go or whatever reason this is happening, I mean, what kind of message is that sending to the investing market?
Okay, so messaging aside, the operations of a Khazana National, right, does it come to a grinding halt because the board leaves? Even if there was a mass resignation today, couldn't they, you know, before the next group of people come in, wouldn't they continue to operate?
Well, I mean, that was something that we talked about when we were talking about the succession plan of Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar. If, you know, before this news broke, we were talking about who's going to be next in line to succeed Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar. And that would really, I guess, be a gauge of where Khazana's headed. Now everything's kind of up in the air.
Well,
it?
Again, no, I don't think so. I mean, again, we're looking at an unconfirmed report.
Sure.
That, in fact, preempts it, right? What's interesting about the Straits Times Singapore and their editorial decision, which is to put out there something that was perhaps concealed. This was a secret, a confidential decision made by the board, because they obviously not put it public, and that could be allow the government of the day to make put in place some succession program. Now, what the Straits Times Singapore has done is it's put out into the public something that was perhaps in a premature fashion. So it's an interesting, you know, that the Straits Times Singapore, if you remember of late, they've also broken other stories. They suggested that the raid on certain Chinese enterprises were timed in order to sabotage Tun Daim in his talks with the Chinese leadership. Straits Times Singapore is breaking some really interesting stories. The question is, what is the net effect of those stories?
Yeah, coming back to this Khazanah story, also the Malaysian Insight has run a story as well this morning.
Yeah, so
on the same thing. So
I'm wondering whether two different sources. Yeah. I also want to point out, you know, Dr. Mahathir was the one who formed Khazanah in 1994. So he, I think a few weeks ago, said, you know, there was concern about whether they were following the initial intention of the formation of Khazanah. Now that he's back at the helm, I wonder whether he, you know, this could he'd be trying to write that ship or that direction.
Now, moving forward, Malaysia's proposed second national car project could be a purely electric vehicle initiative. And this was a statement, I believe, kind of clarifying some of the initial statements that were made. I believe Tun Dr. Mahathir broached the issue of a national car.
A second national car.
Mm-hmm. In his visit to Indonesia.
Correct, yes.
And now you're looking at an electric vehicle initiative. How are we going to do that? That's the question here. And whether or not we have the technology to do that, right?
Okay, so this is spearheaded by Malaysian Green Technology or Green Tech Malaysia. They are working on a proposal for a potential electric-based second national car project. The idea is to work with the Ministry of Energy, Technology, Science, Climate Change and Environment. If I could just quote an interview that Green Tech Malaysia CEO had with the Malaysian Reserve. He says, the committee is a high-level committee. The committee is working on a proposal to be presented at the ministry level. And if it secures approval, it will then be forwarded to the Prime Minister. Now, I guess I'm wondering, you know, we've talked about the proposal for a second national car. But now we've got details that it's going to be an electric-based national car.
Potentially, right?
Potentially, right? So that, you know, the alarm bells rang when we talked about the proposal for a second national car. Now, I think there's going to be a second round of alarm bells going off to know that it could be electric-based. Why? Because the question is, are we ready for it?
Yeah.
I mean, do we have the infrastructure for an electric car?
Yeah, and for infrastructure, you need the EV charging stations nationwide. How many of that do we have right now? I mean, I remember working on the story a couple of years ago where with this listed company, Insus, they lease a Tesla cars, mm-hmm. right? And it's they were saying that basically you have to have enough charging stations in town. So it's a chicken and egg situation. You can't have the electrical vehicle without charging stations, but you can't build charging stations and there are not enough electric cars on the road. That's going to, you know, it's not going to have a purpose as well. So we're in this situation right now. Are we moving towards building that structure?
Apparently, Green Tech Malaysia and Tenaga Nasional will be constructing electric vehicle charging stations nationwide.
Yeah. In fact, we have some numbers here. They aim to build some 10,000 charging stations nationwide. Thus far, or at the present moment, we have about 234 charging stations. 150 of them are in the Klang Valley.
Okay, so that's a huge step up from 234, perhaps just in the Klang Valley. Now they're going to boost that up to 10,000. So hopefully with more infrastructure in place, then I guess people won't be so afraid to
drive
or be hesitant to take up electric cars. That's one thing. That's the demand side, right? Whether people will want to buy electric cars. But on the supply side, do we have the kind of technology to build an electric car that can be, you know, the flag bearer, so to speak, of Malaysia?
Yeah,
the red flag is not in the car initiative. You know, if you have an automotive industry, you know, plan and you think we have the comparative advantage to do this, then that's fine. It's the national part of it that I think is perhaps something that needs a broader discussion because so much of manufacturing doesn't happen simply on a national level.
Sure.
That kind of ambition belongs really to the 20th century. The 21st century seems to have a very different approach in terms of production. So when we talk about a national car, are we looking at a purely national car? Or are we, in fact, just saying that as a way of of branding it, rather than actually talking about its production process.
Yeah, and but we could still work with other countries or private companies when it comes to technology, just making sure that we execute it correctly.
Yeah, I agree.
And to make sure that we have that infrastructure in place. Right now, we don't have that.
You know, when it comes to, I guess, you know, whether we have that know-how, the technological know-how. I mean, you want to build an electric car, you're going to go up against the likes of Tesla. Can or not? You know, that's that's the question, right? Can or not? But I mean, Malaysia boleh, right? So why not?
Well, and then, but the question is why, right? So there, at least I think the ideologically, a lot of people are attracted to the idea of green technology. It's about saving the planet, making things sustainable and such. But there is experience now about electric vehicles coming from countries where such cars are driven. For instance, in Norway, where research has found that there's a positive, or at least the claims, research claims that the positive correlation between the weight of cars and increased car accidents. EV cars apparently are much heavier than ordinary cars. This also does damage to roads. So maintenance of roads also affected by the weight of those cars.
This is quite interesting because the idea for an electric car project or the proposal is really, according to you know, this article on the Malaysian Reserve, is you know, there are environmental concerns being cited. Environmental preservation issues being cited. So they're saying, well, this is better for the environment, but there clearly are pros and cons to this.
Right. Yeah, but there's that real demand for EVs right now. I mean, how many of you, do you know anyone who drives an EV?
Well, there's lots of hybrids, right? So, I mean, I know people who drive hybrids, but full electric vehicle cars, I'm not sure. Apparently, according to GreenTech CEO, they're saying, well, you know, there's also a recommendation that a minor percentage of the government fleet could be converted to electric mobility vehicles. If you remember, that was how Proton essentially got its, you know, a large part of its demand. So perhaps the proposal is that if the government commits to buying a small portion of its total fleet for electric cars, then it will create more awareness and more demand for the manufacturers to come in.
Yeah, but, you know, in the era of wanting government to be trimmed down to size and efficient and lean, that cannot be your main strategy. I mean, it might be a great marketing tool, but beyond that,
you can't depend on kind of just government demand. Who knows?
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back after the news with the opening numbers in the stock market. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with a Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.